I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Oh, I'm really excited right now to introduce Emily Grogan, who is a musician extraordinaire. Emily, welcome to MSO.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Rick. I'm happy to be here.
Well, my introduction to your music was at a festival a couple of weeks ago in Gloucester. It was a harvest festival, I believe, to raise money for local charity. There were many, many musical groups, but you were pretty much the headliner. Your last two bands that you were in and blew me away with your music, so I can't wait to talk about it.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
All right, let's get started. First of all, checking out your biography. Now, the first thing I want to know is your multiplicity of talents, because I saw you play in one band. You were playing saxophone. You were singing backup vocals in the headliner at the bottom of the hour there. You were lead guitar and you were lead vocalist. So tell me about your background, please. How did you get into music and get so involved with so many different things?
Yeah, well, I was lucky to be born into a family that appreciated music and promoted playing an instrument. My parents, when they were younger, were both encouraged to play music too. My mom sang opera and played piano. My dad played saxophone. And they, you know, they didn't continue beyond college, but they wanted to promote that in their kids. So there were five of us kids, and we all had to play piano from a very young age. So I was introduced to music and got a lot of support around playing instruments young. I mean, I was the one in the family, though, who was like, would quit piano, take up flute, quit flute, take up saxophone, quit saxophone, but, you know, do guitar, quit guitar. I played punk rock drums, you know, so, you know, every few years I was like playing an instrument and then trying a new one. And I would still return to the previous one. Mm-hmm. I just loved being able to create sound from a very young age. There was something about the boundlessness of music as a communicative tool that I loved. I found language very limiting. I was kind of a quiet child. I didn't really understand verbalizing. Mm-hmm. I felt it was like something limiting, but when I heard music, it just felt freeing to me. It felt like this freestyle communication. So I just loved that, and I just wanted to find every instrument and every texture and every sound that could do that.
You know, did you have a curiosity about experimenting or about learning how different instruments could be used and playing into your creativity? Because I'm trying to figure out what came first here. Did the technical part come first, or the creativity part come, or was it sort of a mesh?
I think it was mainly the creativity part. I think when I was very young, like 3 or 4, you know, I'd step up to the piano and just write little songs. So the creativity definitely came first, and I was not a fan of lessons. You know, we had this conservatory teacher, and he was very strict, and it kind of crushed the joy of what I was, what initially drew me to music. So it was definitely the creative part. The tech stuff came later, where it's like, it is important to develop good technique, because then you can express yourself in a way that's clean, like, you know, less jumbled, mm-hmm. less noisy, and less wrought with kind of, you know, it'd be like almost talking through static or something. So you want to make sure when you play an instrument that also, for your physical safety and comfort, you want to learn how to play an instrument correctly. Mm. You want to learn what the instrument can do, you know, because the thing lessons are good for is, you know, to know what is possible on this instrument.
I recently saw the special on PBS with Yitzhak Perlman. And he was talking about his teacher, and I guess he ended up with someone who finally let him run free at Juilliard. And where now you're a music teacher, what tools do you use in terms of maybe borrowing from teachers that you had or don't use?
Well, I would say I definitely don't use a lot of stuff my teacher did, because I tell parents, I say, you know, if you want your kids to be doing piano competitions or whatever, I'm not the teacher. Because what I want to do is give your kids such joy for music because it's such a therapeutic tool of expression. You know, it is freeing. And an instrument is like your best friend, you know, when you have nothing to do. What's better than to, like, pick up a guitar and just strum, you know, and start creating? So I would say I definitely bring in creativity to my lessons more than any teacher I've ever had has done. You know, like I said, I also have to tailor teach individual students.
Of course,
some
yes.
Some students, mm-hmm. depending on their age,
yeah.
they'll get very bored by anything involving, like, reading music. So for maybe, like, 20% of students, I find, like, if they're under 10 and they don't want to read and they're resistant, I show them other stuff for a while, but they all develop a maturity, and I kind of explain to them how important it is, for a number of reasons, to, like, to learn other people's music and just read notes and see what other people discovered, you know, their mm-hmm. instrument was capable of. So I kind of impress upon, I mean, everyone gets creativity and technique and reading by the time they've taken, you know, a year or two of lessons with me, but sometimes I start off slow with certain students.
Well, you know what's interesting is that, well, first of all, I taught math for a long time at the high school level, and I really appreciate your being able to read kids and individualize. That's a particular talent that good teachers have to nurture, for sure. The other thing is, in terms of creativity, it's funny, we do a lot of sports stuff, and talking with the Winthrop High School hockey coach, as a matter of fact, you know, he's a disciplinarian, as coaches must be, but he also instills in his kids creativity. Go out there, create offense, be free to, you know, sort of go where your talent takes you. And that's encouraging for kids when they hear that, whether they aspire to something bigger or not. That's encouraging to hear you pump that into them.
Yeah, I think it's really important, actually, especially in math, because, like, I was thinking of when I learned math and the teachers I had that made a difference. When you have something that's seemingly, like, very technical and mechanical, and you realize, like, no, it's a language,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, math is this amazing language. And most teachers teach it like, here's a book, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, da, 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 da. And you're like, wait, this is a language that can describe colors and shapes and why we, you know, like, what the universe is made of. Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, and the musical connection is amazing. I used to try to introduce my kids to that. I'm looking at your biography, and this is in two short paragraphs. There's so much in there. It's amazing. And I want to start and ask you about Rocker Moms, a Canadian TV series. I'm not familiar with it. Please tell me about that.
So it was kind of funny. I was, after my divorce, I moved out to my old, like, one place I lived when I was younger, Sharon, and there were these other moms there, and the woman who would kind of facilitate pick up and drop off between parents and students said, I heard you're a musician. I said, oh yeah. And she said, you know, there's some other moms here who just started a band. You should talk to them. So I did. So I kind of looked them up and I called them. I said, oh, I just moved to town. I don't know anyone. I'm looking for something to do. And they said, come jam. So I started jamming with them. And they were so funny. A few of them were just brand new to the instruments, which amazed me. You know, at age 40, they picked up guitar and drums and bass. And we started playing together. A friend got us a gig in New York City. A big TV production company got a hold of it, IMG. I think they do sports stuff, too. They got a hold of us. They wanted to do a series on us and start to follow our career from the beginning. And it's funny because they interviewed us a few times, and on the third time they were like, so are any of you lesbians, or would any of you fool around, or what? Like, we wanted
drama.
And we were like, no, we're not going to.
That's rude.
Yeah, we were like,
oh man,
looking for drama, or like us in the band to have a relationship with one. Like, what's happening? You know, we realized, like, oh, a lot of these, you know, reality shows are staged.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they staged it for drama, and they kind of, and we were like, you know, we're actually not interested. So we got a call from this Canadian TV production team, and they said, listen, we want to do it as you are, you know, And so we agreed to it, and it was a blast. Mm-hmm. It was like a couple years of filming, and they would, you know, we toured a little bit. We went down to South by Southwest. We were on the Today Show. We were on, like, news shows and Chronicle. So we did a lot of media. We were in, like, the National Enquirer. Like, it was pretty silly. And it was fun, though. Yeah, it was
oh, yeah. Good for you guys for not caving to that other crap. That's ridiculous.
Oh, it was like cheap stuff. And it was kind of interesting. Like, friends of mine who travel to Canada would be like, I just saw your daughter on TV playing guitar, you know, like, and so we were on Canadian television. They replayed the series for like several years. You know, it started out like Wednesdays at 8 o'clock mm-hmm. and then, you know, became on like replay shows, and it was fun.
All right, now I got to go find it on YouTube, and I will. I'll find it.
I'll send you the link.
It's absolutely. Are you kidding me? Now, the next thing I want to ask you about, and that had to be a blast, because that's, man, that's getting published. But also, it had to be, what's the word I'm looking for? A very emotionally positive experience for all of you women to be able to do that. Never mind the TV show, but just to be able to work together like that with a
yeah.
common idea.
Yeah, and what was fun is even before the TV show, we were selling out places in Boston, because what we found is like all these, you know, 40-somethings from the suburb women were like, oh my God, women are doing it. And they were so excited, and they'd bring their husbands, and we would get lines out the doors, you know, like I've been playing music for years, and here was this band, which, you know, like we weren't the best because two of the musicians were brand new, mm-hmm. but people just loved to, it was so inspiring that it attracted a lot of attention.
That's the word I was looking for. It's inspirational in both directions, from you out and from them to you. That's pretty cool. How do you reconcile being a classically trained musician and being a punk rocker?
Right. Well, it's kind of interesting. It's like I was brought up around a lot of classical. My parents listened to classical. My mom was into opera. And I was, you know, brought up like this is just what you learn on piano. And I appreciated what classical could show me, but I loved the raw emotion of punk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a little wild as a teenager, and the town I was from was like, you know, just kind of a suburb where you didn't get a lot of exposure to anything in the universe, but like, here's our nice little cute town, and, you know, we go to school, we come home, we play sports. And I always just had an inkling there was something more. Like, when my parents would take us into Boston, it lit me on fire. I was like, even as a little girl, I just remember the city just was so fascinating to me. And so as soon as I could, I was always like, going in the city. And, you know, it became pretty rebellious in some ways. I was always, you know, a good student, and I almost got arrested, but I never really did.
Okay.
You know, and I think the punk rock is just such a great release of energy and life force, you know. And some classical music hits that same spot. You know, I love, like, wild Ukrainian, like, you know, old classics and Rachmaninoff. Like,
yeah.
Give me drama. You know, I didn't like some of the more controlled classical music and, you know.
I got you, yeah. No, I appreciate that because, you know, I use music in the classroom a lot, and I'd always, you know, the kids would always get blown away when I start, you know, playing some metal songs, and, you know, I love metal as well as classical stuff.
Yeah, Metallica is basically classical music.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? It can be a little dramatic for me, though. Like, punk I like because of the simplicity and the raw
mm-hmm.
emotion and raw energy.
So let's go to the creative part of it now, where you are competent, more than competent, in so many different instruments. When you create stuff, you know, and it's always a trap to ask people who their muse is. I get that. But when you create stuff, is it sort of like a narrow street or is it an open highway? So let's say you're creating something that really lends itself well to guitar. But you have this other stuff that goes on. So how do you work with that? Is it the lyrics first? Is it the music first? Is it the is it the inspiration first, or again, just from time to time, it varies?
I think it varies. Like, I've written some songs that I just start a little guitar lick, and then I hear a melody in my head, and it just flows out. Like, and some of the best songs come out, like, you know, in 10 minutes or whatever. And then some stuff, it's like a lyric idea or an emotion. It really does range. But I know what kind of changed my whole operation of songwriting is computers and what they call DAWs, like digital audio workstation, things like Logic or Pro Tools or Reason or, you know, it's like these things allowed me to take my vision that was in my head and really be able to comb through it by utilizing the keyboard connected to the computer to create with any instrument. So I used to arrange strings for my songs like with just a piano, and I would like write out what I thought would sound good for strings who wanted to play on my recording. But now I can go right to the computer and I can dial up strings and I can go, oh, you know what? I thought that would sound good, but actually it might sound better, you know, with this with a slide guitar coming in instead of. So it's really opened up the fine tuning for songwriting, which I love. And, you know, now I can play the drums and I don't need the expensive mics. I'll play it on my keyboard and I can hear what drum beat might sound best with my song.
That's
so
incredible. Yeah.
And sometimes I'll open up a loop, and I don't use other people's loops, but what I'll do is I'll hear a bass line, and for some reason it's usually a bass loop. I listen to it and I go, wow, that's just hearing that loop inspired me to write a song, yet I never even use the loop. So it's kind of this weird tool now that's allowed me to, like, kind of given me a basic structure or something to write.
Yeah.
Things on.
Talking about going into the universe, I mean, that just opens things up. I'm just wondering, do you sleep?
I used to not sleep when my kids were younger. I would, like, come home from a gig at 3 a.m. I'd wake up at 6, you know, make breakfast, get them to school, take a four-hour nap, you know, pick them up. And it just, that was a little too much. I gave up music for a couple of years so I could, like, parent without being half asleep. But now, I mean, the pandemic's changed everything. Because I definitely have no trouble sleeping. But the pandemic has had me enjoying, you know, going to bed early, getting up early, and
well, the reason I asked that is because when I was learning math, especially in college and graduate school, there'd be times when I couldn't figure out a problem. I couldn't understand the concept. I just couldn't get it. And I'd work on it and work on it, you know, in the daytime. I'd work on the problem. I'd go running, try to figure it out in my head. Nothing. Zero. And then, all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, at 3 a.m., I sit up straight up out of bed, slap my forehead, and say, you dummy. It's so freaking easy. And it wasn't a dream. It just came to me, and I could go back to sleep, and then I remembered it. So I was just wondering if you have any experience like that. Do you carry a notebook with you when you're going from station to station? You know, with
the, you are correct in that, like, what I'm remembering is, like, when I'm writing at the computer and I'm, like, laying tracks down, it does get me a little hyped up. So that I've actually, like, made myself not try and record after 7 at night.
Ah.
Realize when I try and record after 7 at night, that's me till midnight or later, and all of a sudden I go, oh, my God, it's already midnight?
Yeah.
I do get that kind of inspiration when I write. I mean, lately, like the past, you know, year or two, I haven't written that much, and I'm not quite sure why, but it could be pandemic-related. But I've been kind of just focused on, like, being outside and, like, you know, getting healthy after years in nightclubs and pizza and beer, like wow, I'm getting older too.
Yeah,
I want to like focus a little bit more on like how do I now create like my physical body to feel good enough to just keep gigging and keep being able to step and songwrite late and not that rock lifestyle can get pretty. Like, where are you? You know, you're getting older. It's like,
yeah, and I've heard the stories from local musicians about, you know, the poor artist, how poor, how difficult it can be from time to time, and I totally get that.
It's not lucrative unless you're on the top you know, 5%, maybe 10% mm-hmm. for those who, like, have found a connection to get their songs and movies or TV, or to be a star, you know. But otherwise, yeah, it's, I almost feel like it's an addiction of a sort, because I feel like, oh my God, my music has just, like, you know, it doesn't make certain things in life easy. It makes other things in life easy.
Right.
Like, I'm like, I've had a great life, but yeah.
So well, the thing of it is, it's like being an artist, and as an artist, as a performing artist, it's something that, I mean, it's, I tell kids, you know, if you can find something that you're good at and you love to do, and then you get a career in it, you got it made. I mean, it's all about that. And if you have fit your talent to your passion and to your education, and yeah, that's going to go on forever. So, and it sounds like you're getting into a place where it's getting more and more comfortable for you, perhaps in terms of you know, the daily routines.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, the teaching is great. It supports me. When you're an original musician, it is not so easy to make a career out of just that. Like, I know people in wedding bands who make a lot of money.
Sure.
But
mm-hmm.
when you're a songwriter, there is a lottery effect that, you know, like, that's when you make it. The right person at the right time. It's not always, like, I know so many people in Boston who are so talented, who have amazing songs. They have the look, whatever, but the right person at the right time just hasn't walked in, you know?
Yeah, I
really
think
is about that.
Sometimes it
is about money where, you know, like, I mean, I think Taylor Swift is talented, but I think it helped her that her parents were already millionaires.
Well,
they were able to promote, they were able to get her in the right studio, make the right connections.
That's so important, and I think, you know, with your being a teacher, it's great to let youngsters know that, because the example I have is when we go to Disney, when we take the kids to Disney or the grandchildren to Disney World, there are more local kids there who are more talented in the live programs they do in the streets, in my opinion, than any of the stuff that Disney is promoting and the big name stars you hear, like Miley Smiley and all that stuff. You know, so it's a matter of good fortune, and as you say, you know, being the right place, the right time, knowing the right person. But that notwithstanding, the pure joy you can get out of it is sometimes that just overrides everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. I have a cousin who's wealthy, and she was like, "You're always so happy, and you know, how do you do it? You don't really have much money." You know, I drive like a 2010 Toyota with over 200,000 miles on it, and I said, "You know what? I just love life. Like, I have so many amazing experiences that music has led me to. Like, you know, I have toured internationally. I did this TV show, and like met interesting people through it. I've, you know, played crazy gigs and danced all night, and you know, I and just music, like, to have it around me and to be lucky enough to be gifted with a family that supported and like showed us the path, like, you can do this, you know. I mean, life is pretty good. It's like, I have food, I have shelter.
yeah,
you know,
for
me, that's enough, you know.
People ask me how I'm doing, and I quote the second Alien movie, Aliens, that I think James Cameron directed. And there's a line in there from one of the characters who wakes up, and he says, "I love the Corps," meaning the Marine Corps. And then he says, "Another day in paradise, every meal a banquet, every paycheck a fortune." And I use that as my mantra now when people ask me how you're doing. It's just, whether I believe it or not, it works, you know.
Yeah.
Listen.
I mean, sometimes I'm like, you know, material things are material things. Like, anything that can be destroyed quickly is not a value, but experiences are a value, and fun and joy and being able to have a perspective where it's like, hey, we're like alive here for not a long time. Like,
oh God, yeah.
Like, you got to find a way, like, you know.
All right, before I ask you what's coming up, what you want to promote, I just have to ask you about this personally, because I think music, like books, music is both personal and universal. And when an artist can put something out there that hits both of those, to me, that's just an amazing aspect of being a human. Because you write something that everybody or many people can identify with on the one hand, but each person personalizes that. And on stage the other day in Gloucester, I was with a bunch of friends, and you were up there with one band, and you came on with another. And I don't hear lyrics, Emily. I don't know. I've surveyed guys this, not scientifically, but I've asked men, do you hear lyrics? It took me 30 years to understand the lyrics to Kashmir by Led Zeppelin. It did. And it's like, but I hear the music. The music grabs me first. And I was hearing your song, I'm Over It, and my wife was translating for me. She was going through every line that you said, and I said, holy crap, I love this. And it became I had to ask you for it. I have to have it. And now I have to ask you, and I don't usually do this because, I usually get knocked down, but what was the inspiration for that? Because it's such a, it touched me like we have so many, we can have some bad experiences. And part of the psychological recovery is to get over those. And man, you, yeah. In a 4-minute song, bang, you nailed the whole thing.
I mean, I guess what inspires me, every song's different, but for that song, there was some personal stuff involved. Mm-hmm. It was like, I did lose my house, my home,
oh,
you know.
Genie.
At the time, my now ex-husband, you know, it was like very sudden. He developed some, or it didn't develop, but I guess it was in him all along, some mental health issues, which just got worse.
Oh, boy.
And it was like suddenly he was hospitalized, and suddenly, like, we lost our home. And,
oh,
you know,
God.
It just, like, became, like, this thing where I was, like, just in my car with, like, the kids' things and my kids and my things and was like, wow, where do we go? And, you know, and at the time, I was over it. I was like, you know what? This is just like a learning experience.
Wow.
And everything's good. I'm over it. Like, you know, I'm not going to keep looking back. So it was that feeling of like, you know, that I'll soon forget your name and with it all the loss and the pain.
Yep.
Because why hold on to that? Does it do any good? Like I started to realize like there's no good in that. It's like, why poison myself with something externally that I can't control, that has nothing to do with me, really. It had, like, you know, it's like other people have their issues, and they do the best they can, and I did the best I can. And so it was about that. But then my mom had a friend who was visiting, and she told the story. She's like, oh, my God, my husband and my best friend were having an affair. She's like, we're getting divorced. They were having an affair for 3 years, and I didn't know. And she started saying, but you know what? I'm over it. I was like, And
yeah.
So my own personal experience, but hearing her experience and just being like, you know, you, like, be free of it.
It's,
move along.
It's funny. Yeah. The phrase we use with our grandchildren is from some Disney movie where the character says, let it go. Let it go.
Oh, yeah.
And this is much more sophisticated. Yeah. I love your song. I really do. All right, let me ask you now about what's coming up and maybe the music you have posted and so on. You've got a band that you do name the band members. I don't know if you want to mention any of that.
Yeah, so I have a... Well, unfortunately, my bass player, not the one that you saw, he's a new bass player, but the one I had been playing with, he left and moved to Michigan. So the one you saw, we had just had him come on board, mm-hmm. Ed Velasquez, great, great player. And I play with the drummer Larry Dersch, and my keyboardist is Michele Cavalieri.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I'm very fortunate to have them. Great stuff. So what I did is, you know, I'd agreed to do the Gloucester Music Festival before I knew the bass player was moving away. And so when he was like, I'm moving, I was like, oh, my God, I got to find a bass player for that gig. So right now we're kind of regrouping as a band.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to probably try and record something fairly soon and release some new songs. That's kind of on board. And that band Los Gauchos I played with on saxophone, we play out pretty frequently. We'll be at the Burren in October. But again, the pandemic kind of changed everything.
Right.
Because I have some band members who are a little hesitant to play indoors in the winter. So I think I'll probably start booking my stuff again after we put out some recordings. We'll pick up again in the spring. And I guess we've already been invited back to the Gloucester Festival.
Well, that's good. That's good. That was so much fun.
I really had a great time. He did a great job.
That was excellent. All right. Is there anything else that you want to mention before I let you go? And then when we end the interview, I want to ask you a question off the air as well.
Okay.
Anything else that you want to mention?
That is it. That's nothing else. Thank you so much for calling and it's good. I love when you ask questions. It has me kind of thinking about things.
Oh, I love it. And I'm going to introduce you as the Rocker Mom. All right, that is the Rocker Mom, Emily Grogan. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
Pulled up.